KPCA LP, Petaluma, California.
I can't hear anything.
So, good morning, Jason.
Good morning. Partner in crime.
Yeah. Two partners in crime.
Awesome.
My favorite partners in crime.
We don't really commit crimes. We don't want to scare our listeners.
We want to scare our listeners.
Well, I guess it depends.
Actually, Jen has tried to scare us this morning. She, did you see the
I saw that. You know, thing is, it reflects some of the concerns I've had. It's such a new thing. We're talking. We got an email this morning from our co-host about the dangers of marijuana vaping and vaping in general, I guess. Vitamin E acetone. Yeah, is having some negative and unexpected impact. And that's part of the problem with new things like that, is it just doesn't. You know, it takes a while to kind of find out what's going on.
Yeah.
So my instinct was right a little bit by being cautious over those things. But I don't know what's going to happen, but it's a pretty big deal because, I mean, I wouldn't want to be in that business right now.
Yeah, it kind of made me wonder if maybe that's why my asthma is acting.
Yeah, so anyway, that was nice of her to send, but I actually already heard about it. It's been all over.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, it was on CNN. It's
TV. So, I don't even know how to turn on the
screen. So, yeah, the vaping thing, it's a new thing that people are doing, and the idea in theory is that it's better than getting the tars and everything else that you get when you smoke something. But now they're finding that it actually may be worse or have some other problems. So
next thing it'll be cannabis edibles causing stomach cancer.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's really funny this way. You know, a lot of people have the instinct that, you know, you go to closest to the natural source of something that's going to be better for you. That might be the case in this instance. So maybe just eating it isn't a problem. Smoking it has other risks, of course. But it sounds like the vaping thing is not as safe as what we were led to believe. Anyway.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Janice. Anyway, we got the cannabis conversation out of the way for the listeners that rely on that every week.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to go ahead and move right into introducing our guest. Today we have with us Deanna Contreras, who is the spokeswoman for PG&E in Sonoma and Marin counties and also Mendocino, Deanna?
Yeah, that's correct. Hi, Jason. Hi, Cindy.
How are you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad you're here.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, we've got lots to talk about. Specifically, I think we should talk about prevention, preparedness, and support for wildfires. Fires.
Yes.
What do you think,
it's
Deanna?
It's a big looming issue.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's PG&E has a community wildfire safety program to further reduce wildfire risks and to help keep our customers safe, given the continued and growing threat of the extreme weather and the wildfires that we've been seeing. And as part of this community wildfire safety program, there's a lot in there. There's enhanced vegetation management. You know, expanded efforts when it comes to trimming the trees. There's inspections in all of our equipment. There's some system hardening going on. There's a lot going on in Sonoma County. But the one thing that I get the most questions about is our public safety power shutoff program. And basically it's, a program where if there is a wildfire threat, then we could shut off the power for safety reasons. Mm-hmm. When we know how much our customers rely on electric service and the impact that shutting off the power has on everybody, but this is for safety of the community, and there's a lot of things that go along with that, impacts to first responders and operation of other facilities and communication systems and all of that. So lots to talk about.
Yes, and I guess that keeps you pretty busy.
Yeah. And there, we obviously have, you know, Sonoma Ready Day on Sunday, the 8th, at the fairgrounds in Santa Rosa, and PG&E will be there to talk about preparing for a public safety power shutoff.
And that's a public event?
Yeah, it's a public event in Santa Rosa, Sonoma Ready. It's something the county is putting on, and PG&E has a table there. We'll have all kinds of pamphlets and brochures and handouts about this program and what you need to know and how you can prepare.
So, to me, this seems like a recognition of the reality that there's only so much maintenance you can do to prevent a repeat of what happened previously with the equipment, I guess, that was knocked down due to winds and then causing the fire. So I guess this is PG&E's way of acknowledging that there's limitations on what we can do to prevent that, so we need to be in a position to cut the power. So that makes sense from a realistic perspective. But I'm curious, what is PG&E doing, though, to solve the other problem of having lines, you know, as opposed to having them in the air on poles underground? Obviously, it's a big, expensive thing. But are there resources coming to bear that are going to help PG&E to improve the network so that we're not only just shutting the power off to avoid a fire, but we're avoiding the problems in the first place?
Yeah, that's all part of the Community Wildfire Safety Program. There's a lot going on to that effect. And basically, to talk about the first part of your sentence, is that the devastating fires in 2017 and 2018 have made it clear that more must be done, though, and with greater urgency to adapt and address the issue, not just more of the tree trimming and more of the system upgrades and the maintenance that I'll get into, but the public safety power shutoff is that more and greater urgency that must be done.
Yeah. And it's cheaper to shut off power, I guess, than to replace a bunch of aging poles that are termite infested and ready to fall down, right?
Well, that's just our normal maintenance program. I'm talking about going above and beyond our regular maintenance program in the high fire threat areas, these Tier 2 and Tier 3 areas that the CPUC has mapped out as high fire threat areas. And so a lot of extra work is being done in these areas with system hardening, meaning, you know, stronger poles, stronger wires, thicker wires. That's more through the lens of wildfire safety. We're not talking about, you know, bark beetles and you know, woodpeckers. We're talking about wildfire safety here. And so there is a lot of system upgrades with wildfire safety lens going on in Sonoma County, and replacing conductors, replacing poles, more tree trimming that goes beyond the state and federal standards. So, yes, all of that is part of the program.
And, of course, our rates are going to increase as a result of all of this, I take it.
You know, we're not quite sure exactly how much this costs and how rates are going to be impacted at this point.
I mean, a lot of people are a bit upset. Obviously, there was the you know, situation that happened in San Bruno. There's been, I guess, consideration of whether there was negligence or not as a result of this fire. I hear people saying, why don't we just have a public utility at this point, since now, you know, PG&E is, I guess, potentially facing, are you involved with the bankruptcy thing? How's that going? But I hear that from people. They say, wait a minute, you know, the public's letting these guys off the hook. Now they're increasing our rates. Shouldn't this just become a public utility at this point? What do you say to that argument?
Well, you know, we fully understand that we must re-earn trust and credibility. We understand everyone's concerns.
Yeah, you don't have an easy job, I will say right now.
Well, with customers, with our communities, we serve the regulators. We fully understand that we must re-earn trust and credibility.
Yeah.
And we know that our customers deserve the assurance that PG&E will deliver natural gas and electricity safely, reliably, and with integrity. And that is the fundamental role of an energy utility like PG&E. We don't take that lightly.
No.
You know, we have a lot of work to do still. We have made some progress. We have a lot of work to do. We can't change what transpired in the past, but we're working as hard and quickly as possible to get it right.
So I have a question. Rather than replace poles, why wouldn't the infrastructure be placed underground at that point if you're having to...
With the cost?
Yeah. Well, so it's more than just that. It's where are our permits, where are our easements? And, for example, we did have a pilot program in West County, West Sonoma County, just like a half a mile that we were... that we undergrounded just to see, you know, how long it would take, what it would take, the cost that it would take. And the numbers were pretty high. It was like over $1 million just for a half a mile, and it took several months. You know, we don't have a lot of those easements. It takes months to years to get easements, to get permits for the right-of-way, especially in these high fire threat areas where these roads are so skinny and tight. The areas are so tight. Where is all that equipment going to go? You know, that's when we have to go knocking on doors and asking personal property, people who own these property, can we put a big, huge vault, you know, underneath the ground in your property for all this equipment? It's very, very complicated situation. It's not just, you know, simply taking the equipment and digging a hole and undergrounding it.
So on the subject of... funding. I see an article from August 26th in the San Francisco Chronicle where it mentions that ultimately PG&E wants to gradually add $30 per month to the average utility bill. Is that ballpark correct?
You know, I'm not really prepared to be talking about that. I don't really know. There are a lot of other spokespeople in San Francisco who are following all of that.
Right.
I think that is that's part of our general rate case, our GRC hearings, where it's an open and transparent process that we do every few years or so, where we ask for funding, but I don't have the details of
it. The optics are really tricky, though. It's like you have a company that, I guess it's safe to say that there was a responsibility from PG&E in terms of causing the fires, and then you have these articles in the paper talking about giving executives $75,000 pay increases and raising residents' utility bills by $30 a month. I mean, it doesn't look great. It makes it seem like, we're cleaning up this mess for a very large company that, I don't know. I mean, what is your take on that? Do people talk about executive pay and whether that's appropriate at a time where, you're kind of in a money crunch and you need to upgrade your systems to make them safer?
Well, this is a normal. The GRC, if you're talking about the general rate case, the 2020 GRC is part of a normal procedure that happens every few years, and it's this proposal outlines investments that PG&E will make to enhance our ability to provide safe and reliable gas, it's electricity and gas, for our customers, and. It's part of a process, you know, that you can be a part of, that the public can be a part of. The CPC collects input in a number of different ways, online and in public meetings. They had a public meeting here in Santa Rosa, and then the CPC makes the ultimate decision on how much funding the utility will receive based on the information submitted. So,
yeah. Okay, well, I kind of want to steer us back to wildfire safety, if we could. And so tell me, Deanna, what is it that we can do to prepare for a power shutoff?
I think the first thing is to make sure that PG&E has your correct information, your address and your phone number. And the easiest way to do that is to go to pge.com/wildfire safety. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information on that website. If we're monitoring the weather conditions 24/7. Our Wildfire Safety Operations Center in San Francisco is constantly monitoring to see if extreme weather includes a potential wildfire threat. And if it looks like that there's some extreme weather coming and there could be a potential wildfire threat and we might have to shut off the power, we would start contacting people 48 hours in advance. And we have done two public safety power shutoffs, one this year in June and another one last year in October. And we contact the cities, counties, and first responders first. And then we'll start contacting customers. The goal is a 48-hour notice. And then we'll either phone, via text, via email, automated phone call, however you want to be contacted by going to pg&e.com/wildfire-safety. We'll contact you to let you know that this might be happening.
Okay.
And we'll
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And then we'll contact you again 24 hours just before, saying, okay, this might be happening. And then one final time, okay, this is a go or no go. And there have been cases where just in June where we did contact some counties that ended up we did not shut off the power.
Okay. So how long did the shutoff in June last? How many days?
So our goal is to restore power within 24 hours. Of a public safety power shutoff, of shutting off the power, and we did do that. We shut off power to Eastern Napa County, is about 1,600 customers in Eastern Napa County, Solano County, that area, and then in the Sierra foothills. And in both instances, power was restored within 24 hours.
Okay.
So we did meet our goal, what we said we were going to do,
And then there's no way to predict how long it's going to last. It really depends on Mother Nature and how long the conditions exist. Is that correct?
That's right. And it depends on the area. It depends on the size of the event, how long the weather sticks around. Once we shut off the power, we can't start the process of turning the power back on until the weather passes.
Right.
And so once the weather passes, then we do have to inspect all of the lines that were shut off just to make sure there aren't any trees on the lines or any, broken equipment. And we have to repair all of that, remove the trees, repair any equipment that may have been damaged during the shutoff, and then we'll start turning the power back on. And we're getting a lot better at that, at the inspections and the time of a public safety power shutoff is decreasing compared to last year versus this year, doing a lot of practice drills and that sort of thing to reduce that time.
Okay, and so what can I do at home to be prepared? What do I need to do? Let's say, for instance, I am on home dialysis. How can I ensure that I can continue to use my medical equipment?
Generator.
Well, I mean, take an inventory of, okay, what needs power. We will work very hard and do everything we can to turn the power back on within 24 hours, but we do want you to be prepared for, 48 hours or more just in case. And what does that mean? Take a look at your house. Do you have medicines in the refrigerator? Do you have a cooler that you can put those medicines in if the power goes out longer? I mean, most refrigerators, they'll last up to a day without opening, and depending on how much food you have in there and how much food you have in the freezer. But fully stocked freezers usually keep food frozen for 2 days after losing power, and refrigerators usually keep food cold for up to 4 hours if the door remains unopened.
It's a good argument against defrosting. keep all that ice in there. You never know.
right. I mean, because the PSPS could last for several days, we ask to plan accordingly. If you have to relocate, if you are on an oxygen machine or something, very serious for health conditions, maybe you can relocate to, a family member or a friend who lives in another part of town, or just have a plan. We want you to, number one, make sure we have the correct contact information for you, and then number two, have an emergency plan.
Okay. And then I am on the webpage right now that you mentioned, the pge.com/power shutoff. And I do see a link there. I see more than one link there where you can go in and update your information. So that's really easy, just so listeners know that.
Yeah, pretty much any PG&E website you go to or click around, even if you're looking at your bill or whatever, there'll be a big, large button that says update your information because we want everyone to update their information for sure.
Yes. Okay, so, I guess generator sales are going up.
Yeah, some people are even stealing generators, apparently. It's really a tricky one because, obviously, this problem is becoming magnified because of climate change. And so, all these people are going to buy gas generators and, and further contribute to that. And so that's a downside of this. But it does make a very good argument for solar power and local battery storage, like one of those Tesla units or something. It's certainly out of reach for a lot of people, unfortunately. So, yeah, I'm sure people will be getting gas generators.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of great information. There are safety issues when it comes to generators. We want them to be installed properly, and, there's the fuel.
Yeah, you get carbon monoxide poisoning.
There's a lot of different types of generators. We do have a resource online, pge.com/generator, that helps you take a look at what size you need, what kind is best for you, and all the different avenues, if that is part of your emergency preparedness plan. Not everybody has a generator in their plan. They might just want to relocate. It depends. Also depends if you live in a Tier 2 or Tier 3 area versus a Tier 1 area, and that's why we have all those maps and stuff on the website. You can take a look at our website to see where you live, or you can just Google CPUC threat map and see if you live in a high fire threat area. If you Google CPUC fire threat map, it'll show you a Google Earth map, and you can just type in your address, and you can see exactly where you live, because some of those solutions are expensive, and it may not be worth it if you don't live in a high fire threat area.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to get to. It seemed like a large company like PG&E could have a lot of leverage in making it maybe more affordable for people. Is there any thought given to extending some sort of rebate program or something for maybe the customers in most need that can't afford to buy generators? After all, of course, they're your customer, and maybe there's an interest in PG&E. You want to help these people out. Is there any program like that?
We understand that it is very disruptive to be without power. There are some challenges and safety considerations, as I said, with being able to provide mobile generators to customers. We don't have a program right now. We're open to having conversations, or we have been having conversations with our community partners and agencies and nonprofits, and how this can work and how we can possibly support. There are a lot of other conversations happening in Sacramento on such rebate programs and other types of programs. Right now, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We're not able to provide a generator yet, but we've had a lot of conversations with our first responder agencies in our critical facilities like hospitals and telecommunications and whatnot. And most of them do have generator backup, and they are ready and prepared. I just think of the safety issues, though. If you need a larger generator, you do need some sort of automatic switch, which needs to be installed by a certified electrician. And just kind of depends on your needs. Again, it depends on your emergency preparedness plan.
I mean, what would be great is if somehow PG&E were able to offer a little bit of a rebate towards, there's a lot of households that are solar, they're all wired for solar, yet they don't have on-site battery backups. And if there was a way maybe PG&E could kind of help some of those people out with getting some sort of storage system, that would be very nice.
It's important for all customers, even those with even customers who have solar power to have an emergency plan
yep.
to be prepared for an extended outage.
Yep.
If we do need to temporarily shut off power for safety, solar systems could shut down as well.
Unless
and not all generators, right, unless they have, like, the storage
yep.
type situation, yeah.
That's what I'm advocating.
Yep. Well, I have solar, and it's not going to do me any good because I don't have battery backup. So.
Yeah. It just would seem like maybe there'd be, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm asking for too much because of the finances already are difficult for PG&E. I understand that. But it would definitely be a good PR move, I think. I mean, I think a lot of people are a bit upset because they feel like, okay, my rates are going to go up. Now you're cutting my power. Wasn't it your fault in the first place with the fires? I don't know. That's an impression.
I'm looking at it in terms of, yeah, it's a hardship, but I don't want my house to burn down.
Well, exactly. But that's a unfortunate choice. And, you know, look, I can go days without power. I'm not worried about myself. I'm worried about the people that are, you know, maybe in their older years, maybe they have health issues.
That is my situation.
Yeah.
I've been really, really trying to figure out what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I have a housemate who lives in an upstairs bedroom,
yeah.
and it is a dialysis center.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if you've ever seen what a home dialysis center looks like. It is not going to be easy to all of a sudden pick up and move that someplace else.
No,
so that's the situation I'm looking at right now. So
fortunately,
but I still don't want my house to burn down, and I'm okay if you have to turn my power off.
The good thing is that your place, according to the map, isn't in that zone.
Right, and that's a question that I wanted to ask Deanna.
Yeah.
So I live right on the edge of where the map cuts off, but that does that mean that I'm absolutely not going to have my power turned off?
No. Everyone could potentially have their power cut off. And the reason for that is we now have a plan for transmission lines. Last year when we first initiated the very first public safety power shutoff, and PG&E's 100-plus-year history, you know, we had never done this before. We didn't have the protocols in place. We did not have the approval from the CPUC to do this, but we did it for the first time last year. The plan did not include transmission lines. It was only distribution lines that could have been impacted. This year, because of the increasing threat, we have included transmission lines, at the direction of the CPUC and the California grid operator. So transmission lines could be potentially shut off, and that would impact a much larger area. So that's why, you know, we're telling everybody you could be impacted, even though it's less likely, it's least likely. Those who are more likely to be impacted are in those high fire threat areas, but you know, we're not going to say that it could never happen.
Right.
So I remember one of the things people were confused about when they were first looking at this map is that you see basically areas that are surrounded by, you know, areas that would be cut off in terms of power. But then how would the power be getting into the middle section? And I guess what there must be substations or something to deliver that power. Is that how that works?
Yeah, I mean, there's so the transmission lines carry power at a very, very high voltage level to the substations, and the transmission lines are across the state, very wide territories, and then the substations downgrade that voltage to the distribution lines that feed the neighborhoods. So that's just kind of how the grid works. If a transmission line does need to be shut off, that's going to impact the substation. It's going to impact just a much wider area. But I think it also determines if there's another line that you can switch over to.
Mm.
If say we have to shut off this one line because it runs through a high fire threat area, there's severe weather that could potentially be a wildfire risk. We shut off this one line. And if you're not in a high fire threat area, but you are fed by this one line, you could be impacted. But yet there's this other line right next to it that maybe we can switch you over to so you're not impacted. This is a very basic way of explaining it, how we do a lot of different switching and isolation. And we're learning and we're getting better at doing that and where we can isolate certain areas, where we can switch certain areas to minimize the number of customers who are impacted. An example of that is last year when we did shut off power for the first time in October. It was in that parts of Napa County and Lake County, a very, very tiny part of northeastern Sonoma County that was impacted. It was the same lines that we were looking at shutting off again later on in November, the same exact lines, but it was going to impact far fewer people just because of the switching that I explained. And so the more times that, you know, we're looking at doing this, the better it gets, the fewer people are impacted and the faster service is restored.
This might be kind of a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Since we're in earthquake country, I imagine your mechanism to shut down the power has a backup so that it would still be functional in the case of an earthquake. Because obviously that would be, you know, that would be pretty bad. You've got, you know, earthquake and then fires and you can't turn off the power lines because of the earthquake. So you must have some system to resolve that, right?
Well, if there's already a fire, you know, we do shut off the power at the request of firefighters for the safety of the firefighters. And so we have been doing that for years and years, you know, after a fire already prevents itself. But if, you know, if there's a fire and the first responders need that power, we're not going to shut it off. This program is to mitigate wildfires.
Oh, yeah. What I meant, though, is your... The whatever you use to shut off the power, is that immune to earthquakes? My scenario I'm talking about is you got an earthquake, and then we've also got high winds and fire danger, and now you can't shut off the power because the earthquakes interfered with your ability to do that. And I'm guessing you have a mechanism to solve that, but I'm just checking.
Yeah, I mean, the safety of the community is going to be first. Like, what's the safest? What's going to, you know, be the safest way? There's different ways to shut off the power. We can do some. It depends on the location too. We can do it remotely.
Okay.
Some areas we have to do it, you know, physically shut it off in person. Most of it's remote. It just kind of depends on where the threat is.
Okay.
One other quick thing I was going to say about generators is that customers who have home battery systems paired with solar systems, you know, they could generally have up to 2 hours of backup power depending on the size of their battery. I know it is a little expensive, but you should call your solar company and or your battery provider just to double check that all part of your emergency checklist as part of your emergency preparedness plan.
And, of course, a big thing people can do to lower the risk is remove dead vegetation from their yards. I was just doing that the other day. So in addition to preparing for power outages, obviously people should be doing what they can to minimize the risk to their property otherwise.
Oh, of course, yeah. And if you live in a high fire threat area and you have power pole on your line or on your property, if you have a line going through your property, I'm sure PG&E has come by your house several times this year. You know, we have our normal vegetation management program, our routine program that looks, you know, for the clearances set by the state, which is 4 feet. We have to have a 4-foot clearance around the power pole all year round. So to keep that 4-foot clearance all year round, sometimes we have to trim 12 to 15 feet. So we have that program going on all year round in Sonoma County. But then we have, if you're in a high fire threat area, we have another enhanced vegetation management work that we do that addresses overhanging limbs and branches and, you know, dead and dying trees. It exceeds the state standards. So we're visiting your property for that, and then we will help you we will remove all of that for you if you want us to remove it for you. But those trees are your property. That is, you know, the homeowner's asset, so they can keep it if they want to. But we definitely will work with you one-on-one on what you would like removed or what you don't want removed and help you with that.
Have you had to shut power so far this year more than a couple times? I haven't experienced an outage yet, but Just curious.
No, we did on June 8th, just once. June 8th in Eastern Napa County, the morning of. It was a Saturday morning. And then we did later on that day in the Sierra foothills in another area. So I don't know if you call that one time or two times, but it's all on June 8th, and then everyone was restored within 24 hours. That's the only public safety power shutoff that we have initiated this year.
Where I live, all my power's underground. Isn't that the same for you,
yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
But I guess it doesn't matter because the lines feeding to us may not be underground.
Right. I wanted to mention with those folks considering using a gas generator, because I researched that, and so now I know that you have to choose whether it's going to be unleaded or diesel gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gasoline, if you're storing it, only lasts 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have to figure out what to do with that old stored gasoline. So
you end up with a fire just
trying
to deal with what happens if you have a
fire.
So if you
have a diesel vehicle, then you could use diesel fuel and just dump the diesel fuel into your vehicle and then renew the container with fresh fuel.
Actually, that's a good point. You can run power just from your car, potentially. 12 volt,
okay.
Right? So you could have your car as a generator sparked in your driveway.
Well, if a generator does need to be connected to your electric panel, if you want to keep your whole house running,
right.
We do recommend that it's by a licensed electrician.
Right.
There are some smaller generators where if you just want your refrigerator, you know, for medications or whatever, you can, you know, plug it straight into your refrigerator.
Right.
But we ask that you ensure it's ready to safely operate before a public safety power shutoff and that you know how to use it before the power is shut off, and keep fuel in a safe and well-ventilated place away from other generating sources like a water heater and away from other living areas, or consider storing it in a shed or a protected ventilated space.
Yeah, well, in my case, I'm just going to pack up and head out of town with my trailer, which is solar, and go out to the beach.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plan B.
So what else, what other points did you want to hit on today, Deanna?
Well, I mean, if your emergency plan does keep you at home, you know, you don't want to relocate, you always want to make sure you have an emergency supply kit. Even, you know, for earthquakes, like you mentioned, Jason, or for any other emergency, we always want to have emergency supply kits on hand. And pge.com/wildfire safety or pge.com/safety, we have all kinds of checklists and downloadable checklists for what you need in an emergency supply kit, food and water, equipment, health and personal supplies, and then don't forget the pets. We'll, of course, be talking about this on Sunday at Sonoma Ready Day. And, you know, just be prepared, basically. You know, make sure you have your emergency supply kit. Make sure you have your emergency plan. And check in on your neighbors, your elderly friends and family members.
Yeah.
I see on your website there's a section on the environment. And it talks about PG&E's commitment to the environment and use of renewable fuels and everything. Do you have approximately a sense of what percentage of power PG&E is distributing is coming from renewable sources? I'm just curious.
Jason, you're giving me the tough question.
Oh, sorry. If you don't know,
I think Deanna specifically is working on wildfire safety.
Yeah. And I know that it varies, too. I mean, we have Sonoma Clean Power here, so I know a lot of ours is renewable, comes from geothermal.
Right.
But just curious about that.
Yeah, I can send you that. We did send out a press release recently. You know, we're definitely dedicated to meeting California's strict clean energy goals, and I think we've actually surpassed our goal that we had to meet, and we did do a press release about that, so I'll send you that press release if I can find it. Sorry.
And then for the listeners who didn't come prepared to listen to the show today with a pen and paper, we will put up on the Inside Petaluma website links to these websites that we mentioned today on power shutoff and wildfire safety and the fire threat map. We can do that, right, Jason?
Absolutely.
Okay, and that would be at insidepetaluma.com. That's an easy one to remember. So.
This is interesting. I'm just finding this on your website. It says, PG&E's Solar Choice gives customers the option to purchase up to 100% of their power from solar energy. So that's kind of interesting to check this out and dig in deeper. There's a lot of information on the website. It's very informative.
Yes, there's tons of information. And website and electric related. You know, so there, because there's a lot of work happening right now, there you could have a planned power outage. This is one thing that has been confusing some folks. Is sometimes we do need to turn off the power in order to replace a pole or to do some upgrades to the system. And if it is a planned power outage, you will get a letter in the mail or you will get an automated call letting you know of the time and date that we need to shut off the power, like a week in advance.
Do you do calls only or is there also a text option?
For a public safety power shutoff, there is the text option because you only receive 48 hours notice.
Okay.
So that's when you sign up for pg.com/wildfire safety. You have the choice of signing up text or phone, or email, and then so there's those two different kinds of planned power outages: the kind where you get a week's notice, the kind where you know 48 hours notice, which is of course is for safety due to elevated weather, and then of course there's the unplanned power outages, where you know it's a winter storm or extreme heat or something Mother Nature related that causes an outage, and with the public safety power shut off, every time the power goes out, I get a million calls, people asking, you know, is this a PSPS? And I'm like, well, did you get a notice? There's just awareness out there that there are different kinds of power outages. It's not always going to be a public safety power outage for, 24 hours.
Yep. I get letters in the mail for, not so much lately, but when they were building Brody Ranch, there would be power outages for an entire day, and I always got a letter at least a week in advance to let me know that. So that was nice.
Oh, great. Yes. Okay.
I mean, it wasn't nice to be without power, but it was nice to know that it was going to happen. And I had a question for you. Well, it's not a question. I was, for the listeners, I would like for you to define what the tiers that you keep referring to, tiers 1, 2, and 3. What exactly is a tier?
Sure. So the CPUC, California Public Utilities Commission, mapped out the high fire threat areas with CAL FIRE and in three tiers, tier 1, 2, and 3. Tier 2 and 3 are the highest fire threat area. When you look at maps on the CPUC or if you Google the maps or if you see the maps on our website, they'll be in red or orange. Orange is tier 2, red is tier 3, and then the white areas are just tier 1.
Okay.
So when I talk about the tier 2 and tier 3 areas, and those are the high fire threat areas where you're most likely going to be impacted by public safety power shutoff, where you're most likely going to be getting multiple points of contact from PG&E regarding the trees on your property, and also, you know, the areas where you're most likely going to get multiple points of contact from PG&E regarding, you know, a power pole on your property or us inspecting equipment on PG&E equipment, not customer-owned equipment, but PG&E equipment on your property. That's what I mean by the high fire threat areas.
Okay, good. So, Jason, are you out of questions? Because that's unusual.
since we're trying to confine it to fire stuff, I was trying to think of some other questions.
Oh, you were browsing?
Going through the website.
He left
me. I'm checking to see if there's anything that I missed in terms of questions. But mainly, it's about preparedness. It's about understanding that, it's at some point it's inevitable that the power is going to shut off.
Right.
And we just need to figure out how best to deal with that. And obviously, it's preferable to do that than to have a fire. So I appreciate that PG&E is taking an approach that can prevent a calamity in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's there's a lot of technology that's new to Sonoma County, too, with regards to weather stations and high-definition cameras that we're installing to feed us information. The more information we have, the better we're able to determine if a public safety power shutoff is needed. For example, we have about 14 weather stations that we've installed on mountaintops on our assets, on our poles and towers and whatnot, 14 just in Sonoma County, and four cameras, high-definition cameras here in Sonoma County.
Oh, that's great.
And a lot of those weather stations are in Petaluma. Mount Burdell, I guess, is close to Petaluma.
Right.
Wilson Hill Road, Red Hill Road. There are several in Petaluma. And all of this information is feeding back to our Wildfire Safety Operations Center. It's our hub in San Francisco where we have meteorologists, we have operations specialists, other analysts looking at the weather station information, looking at the cameras, temperatures, wind speeds, a lot of different criteria to determine if a public safety power shutoff is needed. And it's not just, you know, one thing.
Yeah.
It's not whether it's just a red flag warning day, because the rumors will start spreading as soon as the National Weather Service declares a red flag warning day. People will automatically say, no, PG is going to shut off the power. That's simply not the case.
Mm-hmm.
There's several different criteria involved in whether or not we do have to shut off the power for safety. That includes sustained winds, wind gusts, low humidity levels, critically dry vegetation, on the ground, observations from field crews, all of that, and with, you know, most likely on a red flag warning day. So, that's something I wanted to clarify.
So that's great. If someone were interested in being able to see that information to monitor in real time, is it something that's publicly accessible or just?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a real, you can totally geek out on weather information at pge.com/weather.
Okay.
If you're into all of that, if you want to see all the weather stations and the cameras and whatnot, pge.com/weather, it shows you what our meteorologists are working on, basically, wind speeds, wind direction, all of that stuff. And you to see the actual live cameras and to zoom and to pan on the actual cameras, you have to go to the alertwildfire.org website. Alertwildfire.org is the system that runs the camera network, the network of cameras. But, you know, you can also see them on the pge.com/weather website as well.
Is there an app for it as well, for the smartphone, or just on
no,
the website?
That's a great idea, though, but no, not yet. We just launched this pge.com/weather website last week. So
that's cool. I have to check that out. We'll go ahead and include those links.
Yeah, we're up to four now.
Wildfire
safety.
There are going to be a lot of links.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
No, this is good, though. This is all good because people need to be prepared. And, you know, instead of just sitting around and complaining about it, get on your computer and start figuring out what you're going to do.
Yeah, I can't believe how much information is on this website, actually. I stumbled onto this section about guarding against scams. And, you know, whenever like this comes up, there's it's another way that people can kind of scam you. So it says, beware of scammers posing as PG&E to gain access to your property, as well as emails and calls requesting your personal information or attempts to collect payment on behalf of PG&E. Yeah, that'd be a great trick, you know, pretend that you're concerned about someone's, you know, fire safety and that you're from PG&E.
Yeah,
so,
I see those alerts on the Nextdoor app all the time where somebody had someone come to their door posing as an agent for PG&E. So.
Crazy. It's like there's
and did they have? We have corporate security folks here in Santa Rosa that do investigate that and try and take, collect, you know, any hats or shirts that have the PG&E logo on them. And, don't believe that they're PG&E employee just because they have a PG&E hat or a PG&E clipboard. They need to show you ID. And we're most likely not going to be knocking on your door unless, I mean, if we're going to come check your gas meter, for example, we, you know, would notify you before that. Sometimes, not always, but, you know, we would never enter your house. We're just checking the gas meter. You could be contacted via phone or via letters if we tried to get to your gas meter and there was a fence or something and we couldn't get to it. But the one scam that has been popping up in Sonoma County is over the phone. It hasn't really been in person. People targeting small businesses like restaurants, mostly saying, you know, we need a payment immediately or we're going to shut off your power. And obviously restaurants, they need power to stay in business and to make money. So there's a lot of that going on right now. And we would never call you to demand immediate payment. It would be, you know, your bill. It would be in your bill that you get, you know. We would never call you and demand a payment, and definitely not ask for a credit card number or any financial information.
I had this weird one, and I don't know if it's a scam or not, but I ended up getting out of it. But someone contacted us and talked us into going to this other energy company somehow, and it was supposed to be cheaper, getting it through, I think it was Spark Energy or something. And do you have any thoughts on that? Because I didn't know what to do with it. They kept claiming I was going to save all this money on the utility bills, and then I was reading about how it's kind of a scam. But anyway, I reverted back to just PG&E. I don't.
I've heard of that when it comes to gas. There are some other gas entities out there, and PG&E supports choice. There are some legitimate gas companies out there that will try and get you to switch, which is fine, but you do, you know, need to read the fine print. You really need to do your homework on that. And there are some really aggressive ones that will knock on your door. I've had that happen to me a couple times.
Yeah, well,
they were
claiming I was saving, but then there were all these extra fees that were being added, and I was done with it.
Yeah, you can always call us, our 1-800 number, if you want to double check if we're doing work in the area. There's somebody that claims that we're doing work in the area and you want to double check, call 1-800-PGE-5000. 1-800-PGE-5000, that's kind of like your go-to number for anything. If you see a low-hanging power line, if you see any broken equipment, any something safety-related, anything, you know, emergency, there'll be a prompt that you can head straight to the top of the line if it's safety related or if it's an emergency. But 1-800-PGE-5000. If you see tree leaning into what you might think are power lines, usually it's cable lines or telecommunication lines. But if you think, you know, there's a tree leaning, definitely call the number. If there's some guy at your door claiming to be PG&E, you want to double check, you can call the number.
What did you do before this?
I was in public relations before this in San Francisco, public relations.
Tech company. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're doing a great job for PG&E.
Yes.
Thank you.
We're very happy to have had you on the show today. Thank you for being here.
Yes, and if I'll send you the clean energy information. If you have any other questions, just email them to me, and I'll give you whatever you need. I'll give you a bunch of other answers.
Great.
Thank you so
okay,
much.
Well, thanks so much for being here, and I'm receiving your emails. Thank you very much, and I will share on air any that I think our listeners would benefit from.
Okay. Thanks, Cindy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Well, that was illuminating.
Yeah.
Fires.
Are you ready?
Am I ready? Well, I've got my car. I can always power that up. No, I have an electric car. So if my electricity goes out, I have to figure out another way to charge it.
Yeah.
I have a gas car as well. So, but no, I'm not personally as worried. I'm not really worried about my situation. I feel for the people that are, you know, have health conditions where they're really, their lives are depending on power.
Yeah.
I mean, we can go some time without power in our family, you know. In fact, it might be, you know, grab the acoustic guitars, kind of, you know, hang out.
Have a kumbaya.
Yeah, do what we used to do before we had all these smart devices and things, you know.
I don't know. I've always had electricity in my life.
I have as well, but I'm just saying, you know, camping.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You pretend like you're camping, but
exactly,
it's at home.
Exactly. Although, like I said, I have solar panels on my,
well, see,
my trailer.
This, to me, the biggest thing I take from this is the more independent you can be. If you can actually get off the grid in a way, where you have your own solar panels that aren't dependent on feeding back to the system or that can be switched. And then you've got a central battery like those ones Tesla's coming out with.
Yeah.
That seems like long-term the best thing and probably probably also the best for minimizing the fire risk, because, you know, it really gets down to how we're distributing power. And where people live, they live in rural areas, we have to get power to them. So
yeah.
This idea that maybe, I mean, my brother, for example, case in point, he doesn't have any power lines. He has solar panels and a battery backup system. You know,
well, so. I have a lot of solar items. I have solar charging station for my phone.
Oh, there you go. That's a good. That's a very useful thing people can get.
My fear is that everybody's going to get on the phone as soon as the power goes off, and we're not going to be the cell system is going to be locked.
Well, that's true. I mean, the fire could take out a cell system.
So don't rely on your phone. But once the power, once everybody's gotten off their phones and you are able to use your phone, you'll be happy that you had a solar charger. It's going to be crazy.
Well, and I just think, too, it's like we've got the fires, but like I mentioned before, we are so overdue for an earthquake. And that's something I know personally I need to prepare better for.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where, it hasn't happened for a while, you know, it hasn't happened yet, and you don't think about it, but it could happen in, any day, and we're overdue.
Yep. And the other thing that you should have is a transistor radio with
batteries. Yes, or the crank. I have the crank tonight.
I have a crank one also.
Does you get a little exercise while you're doing it?
Yep, get a battery. And I said transistor radio because that's not old school or what.
You know, I have to say, though, a human power generation. I mean, I've got a bike, and I do, trying to get exercise, a stationary bike system. But why not hook that up to a generator?
And just so the listeners know, you'll want that radio because we here at KPCA do have battery backup, and we will be able to broadcast to you during a power outage, and we will also have emergency broadcast systems. So
we should just all come to PCA if there's an emergency.
Come on down, I'll put you all on air.
Awesome.
All right, I think we're done. So is that it?
Yeah.
That's it.
That was fun.
Have a good weekend, Jason.
You too, Cindy.
Jason. Janice, come back next week. We miss you.
You're listening.
All right. See you later.
All right. Take care.